you need to, in your terminology, taking it out, you have to go with full disclosure to the buyers. They want to see everything. And so you don't go into the QuickBooks accounting, you delete these personal expenses. You leave them there, you run the report, you export it to Excel, and then below that net income, you create an add back schedule, and you go up top, you go, okay, this one's personal, meals and entertainment, travel. Oh, look, you did a website redesign and you spent $10,000 3 months ago. That's a one-time expense for the most part. We could add that back. You had an employee that did outside sales and she tried. She was only around for 3 months. It was a $15,000 expense. She produced zero outside sales commissions. Is that an add back? We could talk about it. In some cases, it is.
Welcome to the Quiet Light Podcast with Joe Valley and Mark Doust. Since 2007, Quiet Light Brokerage has been helping thousands of online entrepreneurs realize their dream of buying and selling online businesses. And now, we're bringing all the knowledge our team has acquired straight to you. No matter your niche or industry, these lessons, tips, and strategies will help you build, grow, acquire, or sell your online businesses better. And now, here's Joe and Mark.
Hey, Joe, how are you?
I'm good, Mark. How are you doing today?
I'm good. Today we have an unusual guest, at least for our podcast.
That's what my wife calls me, unusual.
Well, that's because you are the guest, right? And in Quiet Light Podcast fashion, I'm going to have you introduce yourself to all of our listeners who have no idea who you are. Actually, they know you probably better than you may know yourself at this point because they listen to you so much. But why don't you provide just a quick introduction for yourself?
Wow, this is how our guests feel. Now I'm on the spot. I hadn't thought that you were going to do that to me. Who am I? Self-employed since 1997. I'm kind of an old guy. Can you see by the gray hair? 52 years old. Built, bought, sold my own online businesses. Sold my last e-commerce business for a company called Quiet Light Brokerage. Jason here was my broker. He was the first guy I talked to. I love the process and transactions so much. I reached out to you and, you know, 6 months later and said, hey, you know, I'd love to be a broker. And you said, yeah, let me talk to Jason. Jason thankfully said, yeah, I'll talk to this guy. I came on in early 2012. You and I are now partners now. You're the majority and I'm just a small guy in the process. But since then, closed, approaching 40 million in total transactions, might hit 50 by the end of this year, depending upon what happens. Been around the block a little bit, lots and lots and lots of transactions of all shapes and sizes.
Yeah, and I think it's safe to say that you have built a name for yourself in the industry quite a bit. People know you. And I think for the first time in the history of the company, we had a client that you were working with and your plate was getting a little bit full. So you thought about trying to hand him off to me. And he said, no, I don't want to work with the founder of the company. I'd rather work with you, Joe. And that's never happened. I'm totally happy about that, though. Not that I don't want to be working with a client, but it just goes to show the reputation that you built in the industry.
Or how your reputation is now destroyed. I'm not sure.
Probably that. Word's gotten out. Wow, yeah. He's actually not as good as we thought compared to Joe or Jason or these other guys. Well, we did a podcast episode a while ago with Chuck Mullins, and we're going to be doing some more of these where it's Meet the Broker. We also did one with Jason. So those you can find back in the podcast history. But we obviously don't want to just talk about you and your background, as fascinating as I'm sure that might be. You've got lots of years of wisdom to share with everybody. But we want to actually talk about a specific topic. And today we're going to talk about specifically how to calculate the value of your web-based business or any web-based business. And what is the process that goes on behind the scenes to calculate that value? Now, I know you gave a presentation recently, I think back in January out in California on this. And it turned into a lot of questions about that actual valuation process, like just the formula itself and how do we arrive at certain numbers. So for those listening, we're going to talk you through this. But for those that are watching, we will have something up on the screen, a presentation that you can follow along. If you're listening in your car and you want to come back later, you can find this on our YouTube page, Quiet Light Academy, or on the podcast page at Quiet Light Brokerage. So tell us a little bit about the presentation, Joe, and how you kind of spent so much time just on the first half of this presentation.
Yeah, the presentation was really supposed to be about, the pillars of growth. There's generally four of them, and I put planning in there as a fifth. It was supposed to be about the pillars of maximum value. But in order to get to that, I had to, you know, talk about how to calculate your seller's discretionary earnings and the value of your business. And then it got into add backs. I really was going to do about a 5-minute presentation on that, about a 40-minute presentation on the rest, and then 30 minutes of Q&A. It turned into about 45 minutes of Q&A alone on calculating the value, in particular, the add backs, what was acceptable, what was not, and then the multiples and the ranges depending upon the niche. So today in this first episode, I want to touch on how to calculate the value of your business, and then we'll get to the four pillars of value after that. So simply put, Mark, it's an easy formula. There should be no confusion about it. If you're looking at the screen there, right? Trailing 12 months seller's discretionary earnings times the multiple equals the list price of your business. Simple, right? $300,000 in discretionary earnings times three. You got a list price of a business of $900,000 in the key plus the landed cost of good saleable inventory on hand at the time of closing. All of that language is really critical. Now, I've been a guest on podcasts as well as you on other people's podcasts, and we've talked about this formula at the beginning of the podcast. And then literally 15 minutes in, the host will say, so how do you calculate the value of your company again? Because it's simple, but really, really confusing. So I want to go through it. So we know this formula. It's up on the screen again for listeners. It's your seller's discretionary earnings for your trailing 12 months times a multiple equals the list price plus the inventory if you've got a physical products business. But the problem here is calculating the seller's discretionary earnings. We'll get to how to figure out what your multiple is, but the most important thing is how to calculate seller's discretionary earnings. So it's up here on the screen now. It's simple, right? If you use accounting software, which is kind of important, right, Mark?
Very, 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 very much important. Yes.
One of the four pillars. It's net income plus add backs equals your seller's discretionary earnings. So if you run a profit and loss in QuickBooks or zero, it's going to give you a net income number on the bottom. But every entrepreneur, for the most part, sometimes partnerships have better books, cleaner books. But most entrepreneurs, if you take a small salary, if you have a car that you write off through the business, if your mobile phone is run through the business, all these things are personal in nature. And then there's some one-time expenses as well. Those are considered add backs. So if you run a business and your net income is zero, that doesn't mean your business is worth zero. You could take a $100,000 salary and that's an add back because it's a personal benefit. Make sense?
Makes sense. But I want to back up just a minute here.
Okay.
Go back to the previous slide.
Yep.
Where we're talking about the formula that we're using to calculate value. And that formula, again, just to drill it into people's heads, is the trailing 12 months seller's discretionary earnings, which is close to EBITDA in most cases, but not always. So we take that, we times it by a multiple, and that's where we come up with the asking price or the estimated value of a business. But let me ask you, or give an objection that we hear a lot from sellers when they see this. Isn't this too simple? What about all the other aspects of their business? What about the unique relationship that they have with a supplier or the upward mobility or upward scalability of the business and the trajectory of it? Isn't this just looking at the income only and not paying attention to all those other things?
Yes and no, right? And that's the answer, is that we come up with a value range. It's not a firm number, it's a value range. And your business may swing in that range depending upon some of those things. If you've got a 5-year-old business and you've, you know, got 30% year over year growth versus an 18-month-old business, one is more valuable than the other. If you've got a patent on a particular SKU that you have that prevents other people from competing with you, that brings more value. If you have diversified revenue streams, you know, Shopify or your physical, your website, Amazon, different Amazon countries, Jet, Walmart, Daily Deal sites. That's diversified revenue. Diversification means less risk. Less risk means higher in that multiple range. So all of those things come into play. But as I say often, we can't take an email list of 10,000 and say each email address is worth $5 and do that math and add that to the value of the business. What it does simply is boost the value range of the business itself.
Thanks. Right. And I think another way to understand this as well is that although our formula has two main parts, the trailing 12 months seller's discretionary earnings being one part and a multiple being the other part, that doesn't mean that it's we're looking at two things. As we're going to go into both sides of this, the multiple and the trailing 12 months are summations of bigger calculations, right? So when we get to the SDE, when we're calculating that seller's discretionary earnings, we're going to go over that in this podcast episode. There's a lot involved in calculating seller's discretionary earnings, just as there's a lot that goes into understanding what makes up the multiples. So these things kind of summarize the business and all of those intangibles as well. And I think a lot of people that do know this formula, they focus a lot on the multiple. But I love the fact that what we're going to do here is we're going to unpack this seller's discretionary earnings number and see what goes into building that, because this is actually an area where there's a lot of opportunity for optimization in business.
It's once you understand this aspect of it and you plan an advanced sale of your business, or never to sell, but someday you may wake up and want to move on. If you understand the value, you're going to have a much more valuable business down the road. And, you know, I think we were at a presentation together where someone got up and said, odds are the most valuable asset that you own is your business. And if you don't take care of it and you don't understand its value, you're not really maximizing it. So really important. The other key point here is, Mark, the trailing 12 months, right? It's not the trailing three, trailing six times two or anything like that. Trailing 12 always takes into account the seasonality of a business. And we do have a year-over-year comparison when working on that multiple valuation as well.
Yeah, and just one last asterisk on this. This is one formula that is used. It's used in this industry for online businesses, which is why we use it. It is not the only way to estimate the value of a business. But what I would tell anybody out there that wants to look at different valuation approaches, they all essentially do the same thing. Some do it more complex than others. And at the end of the day, these are predictive formulas, right? We're trying to predict what somebody's trying to pay. So anyways, on with the next slide. And I took us back a little bit, but I did want to get into that a little bit. So add backs.
Keep doing it. I do this every day and it's simple language to me now, but it's not simple. It's pretty complex.
Right. Okay. So let's get into the seller's discretionary earnings. If I go into QuickBooks, because everybody I know that's listening is using QuickBooks or Xero or professional accounting software, right? Everybody's using that, I'm sure. Nobody's using Excel. Where can I go in QuickBooks to calculate or see what my seller's discretionary earnings are?
You can't.
It's not in QuickBooks?
No. Right,
so what is it? What is seller's discretionary earnings?
It's your net income, which you get out of QuickBooks or Xero, plus the add backs. That's what equals seller's discretionary earnings. So the big question is, what's an add back? And this is what took 45 minutes in the Q&A session that I did. So when you get to add backs, and I'll go to the next slide here, this is a lot of information, but really an add back is something that is a personal benefit to the owner of the company or a one-time expense. Now, there are always exceptions to the rule and you always want to use math and logic, but an example is owner payroll. If someone takes a payroll of $128,000 to maximize their Social Security, that's an owner benefit. And if your business is doing net income of $500,000, you add back $128 to that. So now your discretionary earnings would be $628. Simple round numbers, if you're doing $50 in net income and you take salary of $50, your discretionary earnings becomes $100,000. And so if your multiple is three times, on the net income, it's only $50. On discretionary earnings, it's $300,000. Big difference.
Right. So why are we adding back these expenses? So basically what you're doing is you're going through, you're taking a look at a company's income statement or profit and loss statement. And that's something that you can generate in QuickBooks or Xero or any professional accounting software. And you're going through those expenses and you're looking at some and you're saying, okay, we're going to add, you know, right now this is acting as a subtracting number to the revenue. And that's how we get to net income. But you're saying we're going to actually add that expense back. So effectively take it out. Why are we taking out these expenses?
They're personal in nature and they're personal benefit. But you need to, in your terminology, taking it out, you have to go with full disclosure to the buyers. They want to see everything. And so you don't go into the QuickBooks account and you delete these personal expenses. You leave them there. Yeah, you run the report, you export it to Excel. And then below that net income, you create an add back schedule and you go up top. You go, okay, this one's personal, meals and entertainment, travel. Oh, look, you did a website redesign and you spent $10,000 3 months ago. That's a one-time expense for the most part. We could add that back. You had an employee that did outside sales and She tried. She was only around for 3 months. It was a $15,000 expense. She produced zero outside sales commissions. Is that an ad back? We could talk about it. In some cases, it is. But there's a lot of that that goes deep, deep, deep into conversations with the owner of the business in order to get to the most important number, which is that seller's discretionary earnings.
All right. Yeah, very good. So when we're doing these ad backs, what we're doing is we're taking out these expenses because we want to present it to buyers and show them what the business operates from a standard starting point. Right. So we call these discretionary expenses, and we call them discretionary expenses because they're expenses that the owner is spending at their discretion, to be circular about it. So how would you go about, or I'm going to hand back over to you. What's the next step for going through and explaining and understanding these ad backs?
Let's just give some examples, some things that people brought up, and I've just popped something up on the screen. You know, question, can, you know, I go to the gym every day. You go to the gym pretty often, right? You try to get out and you might run it off through your business. Is that a personal benefit? You tell me. Yeah,
absolutely. Absolutely.
So if you spend $50 a month to the gym, that's an ad back. It's $300 a year. That's $1,000 added to the value of your business if your multiple is over 3x. Your car, your meals, and your entertainment. A big one that you and I and the entire team talked about recently was, as an entrepreneur, you may travel to different events. You may go to the Prosper Show that we were at in March. You may go to Smart Marketer Conference. You may go to SellerCon, whatever the case might be. Can you write those things off as an ad back? And we collectively said yes, because it's a personal choice of the owner. In most cases, you can learn those things online, but you're going for the camaraderie and it's helping with your business in some ways, but it's not a required expense that carries forward to the new owner. And that's the most important thing. It's not an expense that carries forward to a new owner.
Let's talk about that trade show example, because I think that's a really good example where we can get in and show how understanding what gets added back and what doesn't get added back can be somewhat nuanced. So let's take two different scenarios and start with, we'll start with Rhodium. We've talked about them a bit, and you know, we like the guys at Rhodium quite a bit. It's a good community. I would go to that event just for the camaraderie and the networking alone, without necessarily having any business. There's always a business interest with what we do, but my main reason would be to go there for the camaraderie. Looking at Quiet Light Brokerage, would that be considered an ad back? Yes or no? Probably, because we're not necessarily selling our services at that point. But if we display at PubCon, if we get a booth display there or making active contacts, would you consider that an ad back?
Well, let me tell you, let me correct you, if you will, on Rhodium. We go to Rhodium and we are sponsoring the event, so it's an expense to us. We stay in hotels, we have meals, we have entertainment, and we produce revenue from it because we build relationships with those people who then come to us to list the business for sale, and that produces revenue. So when you've got an expense that produces revenue, it's not an ad back, right? Simple as that. But an example of someone going to Rhodium, real example, someone went to Rhodium recently and her husband decided to go as well, didn't go to the events, but was there. And then they stayed an extra week and called it their honeymoon, went on a helicopter ride, did all sorts of different things. And it was a complete business expense and write-off. Absolutely a write-off. She can't tie revenue to that expense. So it's an ad back. There's always, you know, math and logic with these. Sometimes buyers are not going to see it the same exact way that the seller or the broker will see it. But we don't push them. It's got to be crystal clear because, and full disclosure, because once you're under LOI, we don't want any surprises. An example that is not an ad back that someone brought up, they said, well, I'm using an ad agency to do all my Facebook advertising, and I pay them 15%. I spend, let's call it, you know, $1,000 a month. That's $150 a month expense. I'd like to add that back because my logic is, if the new owner has that experience and doesn't need that ad agency, then they're not going to have that expense, so it doesn't carry forward, right? Well, no, it's an expense that ad agency spends money. It produces revenue. You can't. It's a big leap of math and logic. We don't know if that particular buyer has that experience or not. If they do, good for them. It's a savings on their part, but we can't add it back assuming everybody has that experience. Make sense?
Yeah, absolutely. I think there's a common sense factor here. And that is what we want to do is we want to look at the expenses that have been used for the normal operations of the business. So right. expenses that have been used for normal operations, they stay. The elements that are outside of normal operations of the business, those are the ones that are typically going to be added back. So personal benefits, those one-time expenses will be outside of normal operations because it is part of normal operations, but it's such a rare occurrence. We want to show buyers, well, what's their expected ROI from this business if they were to acquire it? And so you can't, you have to have a common starting ground, and that's where you end up getting into the add backs and taking out those discretionary expenses.
Yeah, let's talk about one more sort of not black and white example, just to talk about what you said, which is common sense. So I listed a business last fall, and the owner of the business really literally worked 5 hours a week. He had a full-time person doing inventory planning, things of that nature, customer service, doing inventory planning and design. And then he had someone that he had do customer service. That someone that he had do customer service was his brother, and he paid him $30 an hour for customer service work. The customer service work involved canned responses, and canned responses in email, and canned responses in a pop-up chat. He was grossly overpaid doing that kind of work, $30 an hour. My advice at the time, and you laughed at me and called me a Scrooge at one point in one of these podcasts, was fire your brother. Okay, you're paying him way too much. I think the total amount that he might have been paying him was, you know, roughly call it $30,000 a year. When in reality, he was paying him too much money, and he was paying him for hours that he didn't really work. So he should have fired his brother, hired somebody at half the cost, made up the difference of $15,000. Let 6 months pass, and he would have, his business, you know, was listed at 3.5. So it would have been 3.5 times $15,000, which would have been added to the list price. He wasn't willing to be a Scrooge because it was just before the holidays. He didn't fire his brother. So we went with math and logic. And we presented an adjustment in the ad backs accounting for his brother going away. Okay. Right. It wasn't ideal. It was a little gray, but the math and the logic made sense. And it worked. We had multiple offers under LOI closed with no issues with that ad back, mostly because it was right there in black and white and detailed and talked about prior to the LOI.
Right, right. And so it does work the other way as well, too. I've actually had the opposite scenario where somebody had a bunch of friends and family helping out in their business, and they were grossly underpaid because they were doing favors. I think it was like the Uncle Vito or someone like that was doing the books for almost no money whatsoever. And in that case, we would go the other direction, and we would actually inject a cost into that P&L to basically say, hey, you know, they're getting a sweetheart rate. That's not going to continue. We need to see what this role is important and necessary. And here's a pretty reasonable market rate for math and logic once again.
Yeah, it's math and logic, and it works well. Okay, I haven't looked at our time here, Mark, and where we are, but a really, really important thing for physical product owners is in the valuation of the business is the thing that put me to sleep in college. Literally, I fell asleep in the classroom, and the new students came in, and I was asleep in the classroom. It's accounting.
Okay,
and,
if you're driving, pop a couple no-dos for this part.
But it is so vastly critical, and this is critical for buyers and sellers. For buyers, listen to this closely, because if you find a broker that lists something that is growing like crazy, a physical products business, and they don't do accrual accounting or flip it to accrual, you're getting that business at a discount, because it should be accrual. When it's accrual, the business is it's the right way to do it, first of all, but the discretionary earnings is higher and the business is more valuable.
Well, hold on. Accrual? Well, what are you talking about here? We're just doing stuff in Excel at this point. So what is accrual, and why is it so important?
Yeah. All right, you're selling a widget, right? So let's say you sell a widget for $10 and your landed cost of goods sold on that widget is $2, 20%, landed at your 3PL or at the Amazon FBA. That's a cost of goods sold of 20%. That's accrual. So that when you sell, you know, that widget in the month of June, that cost for that widget is applied to that month of June. So it's 20%. So your cost of goods sold, landed cost of goods sold, should be roughly the same every month, month in and month out, when it's accrual. If it's cash, you're going to see that 20% go to 60%, 102%, down to zero, back up again. It's going to be all over. And what it's going to look like on the bottom line discretionary earnings is that your earnings are all over the place, up and down, and it's uncomfortable for buyers. The way that they look at these things and the way that we train them to look at these things is, you know, discretionary earnings and then have some working capital for inventory. When you purchase inventory moving up to fourth quarter, if you are cash basis and you're ramping up inventory, and normally you've got $50,000 worth of inventory, but all of a sudden you're stroking checks and you've got cash out of $150,000, that depresses your net income and your discretionary earnings and the value of your business if it's presented on a cash basis accounting. Does that make a little bit more sense and not put you to sleep?
Yeah, that does make more sense. And what I would, the way I've explained it to some people as well is that when you move to accrual basis accounting, it's kind of like going from a two-dimensional picture to a three-dimensional picture, because it looks at your business and where its value is in all places. So instead of just taking cash out when you, as you said, your fourth quarter, you're stroking checks because you got to stock up that inventory. You're expecting a busy Christmas season. So you're writing all sorts of checks out. And instead of saying, okay, I've just lost that much value in my business. No, you haven't lost that much value. You've just taken cash and converted it over to inventory. So accrual says, hey, you still have value in your business because you have all this inventory. You just exchange cash for inventory. And then when you sell that product, now you recognize the expense of that individual item.
That's the key. When you sell that product, that's when you recognize the expense. And a good bookkeeper can set it up for you. And trust me, if you spend a little bit of money, a couple hundred, $300, $400 a month on a good bookkeeper, you will make that back multiple times over in the sale of your business because buyers will have more confidence. Brokers will be able to do a better valuation with less complexities, and you won't pull your hair out during the valuation process. And I've seen people do that. It's really, really hard to go back and do it. We do it more often than not. We do it, right, Mark? We have to go back and flip it from cash to accrual. And I want to show you how to do that. So right now up on the screen, I've got a sample profit and loss statement. Net income, you can see there, we're going to call it $425,000. Again, we've got an add back schedule below it for those listening. Here's some of the add backs. We've got interest expense if they had a loan, legal and professional fees for a patent, for example, or a trademark. Those are one-time expenses, meals and entertainment, office expenses, right? You work from home, but you know, you've got your kids' school supplies that you write off through your business, your own payroll, and I've got vehicle expenses here. So we take that $425,000 in net income plus the add backs of $120,000, and we're now at $545,000 and change in terms of discretionary earnings. So again, you just say a three-time multiple, we added $360,000 in value to this business just with the add backs. But when you look at this gray line in the cost of goods sold, the cost of goods sold as a percentage of total income goes as high as 97% and as low as 5%. So all over the place. In the next screen, we're going to flip it down. So we know that that's cash because it's all over the place. So here we flipped it from cash to accrual.
And this is the same. This is the same company.
This is the same company, the same exact P&L, but within the Excel spreadsheet that was exported from QuickBooks or Xero, or in some cases produced, we flipped the cash to accrual on the total cost of goods sold line only. We don't change those numbers in the cost of goods sold expenses. The only thing that's changed is that total cost of goods sold line. You see, sometimes that total doesn't add up to the individual things. It's because we flipped it to accrual and we work with a formula on that. So there's more than one way to do almost anything, but we work with the seller on calculating the accrual. We'll go into that in a minute. But the key difference is when you look at this, we went from cash to, we were at $425,000 in net income, right? Now we flip to accrual. You look at that net income line, that's jumped from $425,000 to $485,000. So we've added $60,000 in discretionary earnings just by flipping it to accrual. Let me repeat that for those that are almost asleep because we're talking about accounting. By not producing any more revenue, by not hustling any harder, by not renegotiating cost of goods sold, by not doing anything other than good accounting, we've increased the net income from $425,000 to $485,000 by using proper accounting.
And this begs the question, Is this dishonest in any way?
No, it's the absolute right way to do it. It's standard acceptable accounting principles. The other way is the, you know, ready, fire, aim approach that unfortunately most of us take, me included, because I didn't know anything about QuickBooks or accounting. I fell asleep in class. I never had a bookkeeper. This is actually the right way to do it.
Yeah. All right. So that's true. So both cash and accrual are acceptable ways of filing your taxes and doing books, right? The GAAP does recognize both. However, accrual for a products-based business is going to be more accurate and more thorough. And so what you're saying is that the cash basis actually undervalues the business when you record your books on the cash basis.
If the business is growing rapidly, absolutely. Because they're taking, you know, almost every expendable dollar that they have and putting it back into inventory. So an example is, you know, you and I talk about this valuation a lot. I had a client that went to every other brokerage firm. They really needed to sell their business because they had a house under contract contingent upon the sale of their business. It was foreign income. They lived in New Zealand. They had an Amazon US business. They had to sell the business to close on the house. A tough situation to be in, a foolish situation to be in. They went to, got different valuations, and every broker was trying to push that multiple high to help them achieve their goals. Too high for that 18-month-old business. They came to me, we did the proper accounting flip, we did it in accrual. I was able to push that multiple down, and other brokers were like 3.5, it was never going to happen. We were able to push it down to about 2.7, yet the value of their business was a couple $100,000 higher. So we had a higher value and a lower multiple, more attractive to the seller, more attractive to the buyer. We had a buyer that was really good at accounting, really good entrepreneur, fully understood it, bought it, went through due diligence, really happy. Both buyer and seller were happy. So right, this huge value.
This is actually a really good, I guess, pro tip for people buying as well. If you come across an opportunity that's not with QuietLight, because we are going to almost always be pushing our clients to moving over to accrual in pretty much every circumstance for an e-commerce business. But if you come across an opportunity as a buyer and you see cash-based books for an e-commerce business, take a look at the trend of the business. If that business is growing, as you point out, Joe, then the cash-based accounting is going to undervalue the business. On the other hand, though, if that business is shrinking and they are not adding new inventory, they are going to have inflated or apparently inflated margins because they've stopped buying inventory, they've stopped recording expenses, and you could actually end up overpaying for a business if it's on the decline. So that cash basis accounting, just for a product-based business, it's unreliable because of the fact that it doesn't take into account when the expense of the item when it's sold. And so you really have to pay attention to the other aspects of the business, such as this trend.
Absolutely. And cash-based accounting is okay for a SaaS business and things that don't have accounts receivable, things of that nature. But for a physical products business, accrual is the way to go. Buyers beware if it's cash, especially as Mark said, if it's declining, buyers get excited. If it's growing like crazy and it's cash basis, you buy it, hold it for a year or two, and then you do accrual-based accounting and your value's instantly higher. So in this example, again, to move things along, we've added 60,000 in discretionary earnings. If, by example, we were at a 3x multiple, that's $180,000 added to the value of the business by not selling a single widget more. Really important. So how do you calculate accrual? It's really complicated, to be honest with you. You got to have good history and records to do it. Again, start with a good bookkeeper, but the formula is simple. Beginning inventory plus purchases minus ending inventory. That equals your cost of goods sold. And this should all be landed. And this is ideally on a monthly basis. Now, you can't do it, right? If you haven't done it yet, you can't do it. So what you got to do is go back in history and figure out what your cost of goods sold are with different formulations and calculations. And it's different for each client that I work with. Absolutely doable. I got two listings in the last 2 months where we had to do that and couldn't do this. I'll be honest with you, most times we can't get to this. It's ideal if we can, but more often than not, we have to go with another method, which is take all of those purchases, take all of the shipping costs, average out the shipping costs times the number of units that you're shipping. It's complicated. And I can't tell you exactly how it is because every situation is different. But that's the formula. The end result, again, when you flip to accrual, is a higher value. Again, going back, quick review before we put too many people to sleep with this. Your most valuable asset is more than likely your business. You should know what the value is within a certain range, 10%, I hope. And then the question is, okay, I know how to calculate seller's discretionary earnings. The final thing is, what kind of multiple range do I put on it? And what I've got here up on the screen is for physical products businesses, and I'll talk about content businesses and SaaS businesses and so on and so forth as well. So a larger business is more valuable in what ways, Mark?
Large businesses are more valuable. And today's podcast episode that actually launched today was on that very topic, is buying big better than buying small. Go back and listen to that one. Fun episode. Larger businesses are more valuable because they are more stable. You have more resources available to hire out work or to reinvest in the business. So generally speaking, businesses that have higher earnings and higher revenues end up getting a multiple boost just because they are more stable and have more room for investing and changing the format of the business.
Right. And the other thing is odds are they've been around a little bit longer too, or they have multiple streams of revenue, balanced less. Essentially, they are less risky, therefore they're worth more. So in the examples I've got up on the screen, and we'll talk about them for listeners, if you have seller's discretionary earnings on a physical products business of less than 700,000, you're going to be in the I'm going to give you a broad range, 2.5 to 3.5 multiple range. So if your business is $100,000 in discretionary earnings, the value, big range, 250 to 350 plus the landed cost of goods saleable inventory on hand at the time of closing. Again, as Mark said at the beginning, we take all of those other factors. How many streams of revenue do you have? Do you have any patents? How do you launch new products? Do you have a big social media following that proves that your launches are done without discounts or advertising? All of those things come into play and could push your multiple higher or push it lower, even below this 2.5 times. In the event when we do that client interview and we do the valuation process, let's say that you've had a patent infringement issue and it's still something that's scary and hanging out there, that might push the value down a little bit. Or if your trends are going down, that's definitely going to push the value down a little bit. So again, less than 700 in discretionary earnings, 2.5 to 3 times plus the landed cost of goods saleable inventory on hand at the time of closing. When you get that bigger, more valuable business with discretionary earnings that are north of 700, and again, these are gray numbers, by the way. Again, nothing here is in black and white, but the value is going to be higher because it's more established, less risk. Somebody's willing to pay more because their money's safer. That value range is going to jump. Instead of 2.5 to 3.5, you're going to go from 3.5 to 4.5, sometimes possibly higher.
And if anyone's listening to this a few years down the road and, you know, have dug back in the Quiet Late podcast archives and are now listening, multiples do change over the years as well. So this is where the market is at today, and always check with us to see where multiples are if you're listening to this at a different time.
Got it. SaaS businesses. SaaS businesses in the last 12 months, good ones that are trending well, that have a reasonable workload and have good handle on the metrics. We're going to talk about that in the next episode. You're in the 4 to 5 time range. Content sites, again, and much of the same, you know, dollar ranges here. Content sites, probably 2.5 to 3.5 times, unless you're much larger. I've got one with multiple offers that's between 4 and 5 times. Because of the size of it and because of the growth, its discretionary earnings are well north of $1 million. Affiliate sites, same thing. The real separator here is, I think, the SaaS businesses, because it's generally B2B recurring revenue, and the values are generally higher, at least felt. Buyers feel as though they're worth more. Which buyers are usually right, no matter what Mark and I and the seller thinks, the buyers are usually right.
And we're going to be doing another episode talking about multiples and how do you determine the multiple of your business, because that's a pretty complex evaluation as well, where there's literally dozens of factors. I know I wrote a guide, I think it's on the website right now, called The Ultimate Guide to Website Value. I wrote it like 3 years ago. I think maybe 4 people have read the whole thing because it's long. It was around 30,000 words of all the different things that can really impact the value of a website. I should probably go back and update that because I'm sure there's some things in there that need to be updated now a few years later. But there are a lot of things that can influence that multiple up or down.
Let's leave the listeners with this, Mark, and that's something that we talked about a little bit. You know, if you look at your own values and your own assets, anybody that's listening and you own a business, think about the different things that you own, your bank account, your retirement portfolio, your house, your car. Do you know what the values of those are, plus or minus 10%? You probably do. But do you know the value of your business, plus or minus 10%? You probably don't. Hopefully this podcast will help a great deal. But even with all the information we've shared, you really can't figure it out until you do a proper add back schedule and do all those details. I've had calls, and we've had lengthy calls with buyers. We've gone through it all, and they thought, yeah, I'm my value is about 850. And then we get the P&Ls, turns out their value is at 1.2. Really important to get the details down, get a handle on it, even if you don't plan to sell the business either ever or 6 or 12 or 18 months down the road.
Very good. Well, if you've made it to the end of the episode here, congratulations. We really appreciate you listening in. I'd be interested in hearing feedback, what you think about episodes like this, where it's Joe and I, or maybe we bring Jason on or Chuck on again, and we delve deep into some of the things that we do on a day-to-day basis. Are these helpful for you? Do you like them? Do they put you to sleep? Are they things that you would want us to do more of? Let me know. Send me an email, Mark at Quiet Light Brokerage. If you absolutely hate it, then email Joe at Joe at quietlightbrokerage.com. So anything left, anything more to say here?
No, that's it. It's a lot of information. It's a bit overwhelming, and just digest it. We'll have a link to this presentation in the show notes so people can download it. We've got a little summary video of it as well that we can share so people can go through their own process. And then one more thing, I guess, yes, I do have something. I had a client recently that I've been talking to for 18 months. And, you know, I said, what's the one takeaway after all we've gone through? And she said, more than anything else, if I could convey and share something with people that are trying to understand the value of the business and might sell it, is don't be afraid to talk to a broker. Get a valuation. Figure out those things that you need to fix so that 12, 18 months down the road, your business is more valuable and you're prepared. That's the key thing.
Absolutely. We do have resources on the site, articles that break down how to do a seller's discretionary earnings calculation. We'll link to those in the podcast show notes. So if you want to get deeper and couldn't follow along everything in this episode, there are some articles that you can refer to, which will be easy to follow as well. So thanks for listening, and we will be talking again in a week.
Thanks for listening to another episode of the Quiet Light Podcast. For more resources from this episode, head over to quietlightbrokerage.com. If you're enjoying the show, please leave a rating and review in iTunes. This helps share the messages from the show with more business owners like you.